you know, in every way, not just technology, teenagers and children, frankly, we're learning with our children, right?
Absolutely.
We've never done it before when we have our first child, we've never done it before. And our goal as parents is to be one step ahead of our children at all times, right?
Are you raising your family while also feeling like you're still growing up yourself? Do you wonder if you are getting it right? Or do you ask, where's the roadmap to building a happy, healthy life? Welcome to Growing Up with Dr. Sarah. She's a pediatrician and a mom, and she helps the whole family.
Hi, I'm Dr. Sarah Adams, a board-certified pediatrician, but I'm not your pediatrician. Feel free to use my podcast as helpful information, but in no way do I intend my podcast to replace the advice of your physician. Your physician knows you and is in the best position to provide medical advice.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Sarah Adams. With technology, social media, and gaming platforms constantly changing and evolving, as parents, are you finding yourself asking, what is my child spending so much time online doing? How do I stay on top of this technology? How do I learn with my child? Today, I'm sharing highlights of one of my favorite episodes and one that tens of thousands of you also liked. It features Dr. Molly O'Shea, a distinguished pediatrician and expert in how to have the hard conversations with the young people in your lives, from mental health and wellness to all the messy, meaningful parts of parenting and raising kids. As pediatricians, we've seen how technology can both be an incredible tool and a real source of stress for families. Here, Dr. Molly and I talk honestly about how childhood has changed in the digital age and how parents can navigate it with more confidence and less fear. I know that you and I share this passion of helping families navigate through technology because there's a lot of good to it, but we also want to make sure that we're helping them through the struggles. So let's set the stage for parents and caregivers on this role of technology in childhood. From your perspective, how has childhood fundamentally changed in this digital age?
Well, I have the luxury of being old enough to have seen huge shifts in the way children and parents experience the whole gamut of growing up together. When I began practice in the early 90s, technology was really nothing more than a television, honestly. Cell phones weren't really even a part of our everyday experience at that time. And yeah. There was a fundamental understanding as a parent that kids were basically okay, that they were well, that they were competent, and kids could get bored and you didn't worry about it and you just went on with your day. And as things shifted over time, as cultural changes occurred, as parents began to, you know, get more and more concerned about the world around them, about what was happening, both culturally, socially, and as technology entered the world for them and for their children, the mindset of parents shifted.
Yes.
And moved from this place of confidence and sort of assumption that kids were well to a mindset I perceive in my practice life, one of kind of fear to the point of needing to protect, to a mindset that at any moment something could go wrong and I need to curate every decision I make with, you know, thinking it through and researching it because any one wrong decision could be traumatic for my kid.
I know.
You know,
That's hard.
I feel bad for parents today. Feels so heavy to be a parent. And technology wove its way in over the course of that shift over those 30 years. And it came in quietly initially, right? And this sort of, wow, you know, when it came to our children, technology could be this great way to help our kids learn and to, you know, it wasn't so much an entertainment thought initially. It was more a learning tool, right? It was the baby Einstein. It was the way to help them learn math or language skills, whatever it was. And so it kind of snuck in under the radar with young kids. And with older kids, it was video games and single player video games really at first.
You're right.
And yeah, it really was. And then it kind of just grew from there. And parents were really, we all were, frankly, I mean, other than the tech companies who were growing their businesses, we were playing catch up in understanding how technology was influencing us as individuals, as parents, and influencing our children too.
I want to pause on something so many parents feel every day. We're learning alongside our kids, often just one step ahead, if that. In this segment, Dr. Molly O'Shea and I explore how technology has become the new terrain where parents are playing catch up and how screen use in early childhood affects skill building around play, focus, and communication.
You know, in every way, not just technology, teenagers and children, frankly, we're learning with our children, right?
Absolutely.
We've never done it before when we have our first child, we've never done it before. And our goal as parents is to be one step ahead of our children at all times, right? We've got to sort of anticipate what's going to happen for them next and prepare ourselves for that experience with them. And oftentimes I found as a parent, and I see happening with families that I care for, kids surprise us.
Oh, yeah.
Something they do or say or are experiencing was something we had not anticipated yet. Or we thought that was, you know, 2 years from now or whatever, right? That's their job. Their job is to be curious and, you know, exploring the world. So as a result, parents have been playing catch up for millennia. Right? It just happens to be now technology is the vehicle that teenagers are using. And parents and adolescents have always been on different islands, right? Slang language and lingo and music and all the things are ways for adolescents to basically say to your parents, you don't know anything about me.
No.
And that's their job. So the challenge, of course, with technology is that the neighborhood, which used to be as big as the physical neighborhood we're in, mm-hmm. became huge.
Yes.
And that's where I think we really were behind as parents, behind as pediatricians, in understanding the potential influence of that and the potential benefit of that for our kids.
Mm-hmm.
So in the sense of parental use of technology, early adopters of technology like me, I was one of those early adopters, love technology. It's like, oh, yes. Uh-huh. I was very apt to, have my kids participating, using technology, like, ooh, let's find out what this is about. And being a part of the technology advancement when they were younger. And it had a double-edged sword. And I think parents see that, right? So even now, parents who are interested in having their kids when they're really young use technology, whether it's the one-year-old to look at and be interested in looking at the family photos or,
yes.
you know, all of that. We see that in the office, or the two-year-old who's learning the ABCs or whatever they're doing on devices. It becomes a double-edged sword because when they get older, they've missed out on opportunities to learn to play in ways that are not digitally oriented. And then when they're put in situations like regular school, hello, where you're not necessarily going to be getting, bling or stars or some sort of, feedback every time you get the answer correct,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't feel as exciting as your previous experiences with learning, and it creates difficulty.
And that really segues into the developmental impacts that technology has. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
Not at all.
Let's start with how screen use in early childhood affects that skill building, like play and focus and communication.
Yeah. So there's been a lot of attempts to understand where's the sweet spot, mm-hmm. right? How much we understand technology is built in now. We're not going to roll back and Mm-mm. say, everybody put your devices away. You know, it's not going to happen. So where is the sweet spot where we can participate with our kids or hand our kids a technology and feel like it's okay? And for kids who are really young, under two, that sweet spot is using technology to facilitate relationship. Huh. So if you're facilitating relationship, doing FaceTime with relatives who uh-huh. may not have as much opportunity to be together, that's a thumbs up. You get a thumbs up for that. Good use of technology.
Sounds good.
Yeah. If you're using it to co-read, let's say, if you've got a digital book or you've, yeah. Something in that framework, and you're using it with your child, thumbs up. You get a thumbs up for that, right?
Love it. Love it.
Right. If, however, you're using it to, if your child's really upset, let's say you've gone out to dinner with your family and your child is getting impatient, sitting there waiting for the meal and is starting to act up, and you really are like doing the look around because everybody's staring at you. And so you pull out the device to give that to the child. Using it to help your child emotionally regulate, thumbs down.
Okay.
That's not a good use of technology. It really is a limiting use. The child then doesn't learn a skill. They learn to soothe themselves. It's like it's a pacifier of sorts, when really a skill building tool is needed in that scenario. So if you are using it in communion with your child, you're talking through it, I mean, literally in the FaceTime example, or figuratively in the sitting next to and reading, it's okay. And it's okay in part because how long are you possibly going to do that together? You know what I mean? It's not going to be 2 hours of reading together on the thing, right? So it'll also be somewhat time limited. And then in those preschool years, 3 to 5, those years, same basic rules apply. Limited use with a parent. Many times, though, parents begin to, the kids are interested, they want to do more stuff. And frankly, the parents might want a little break at times, like, whew, got to get the laundry done. It's time to make dinner. Or, I just need a break. And that gets to the difference in, like, when my kids were little, we didn't have technology to give them in the same way. So, and I was really comfortable with the idea that they could be bored. They could complain. They could just be fussy. And I would figure, they'll live. They'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Yay's parents have a lot more difficulty sitting with their own discomfort when their kids are uncomfortable. And technology becomes a quick and easy go-to, which I'm not judging, but no. It's just a truth. So if you're going to use technology in those situations, long form is probably better.
Okay.
It would probably be better to sit down and have your kid watch a Disney movie long form than 2 hours, hour and a half of YouTube videos or Nick Jr.
In this next segment, I want to challenge one of the biggest assumptions parents hear all the time, that screens alone are driving today's teen mental health crisis. Dr. Molly O'Shea and I dig into what the research actually shows. Social media isn't the root cause of mental health issues for most teens.
And in looking at the research, all of that research, it is clear that teen mental health has changed. We know that. We see it. We feel it. Parents feel it. Teens feel it. When you dive in and look at the role that social media and technology has played, if you parse that out and look at it as a standalone feature, that's not it. Mm. It's not screen time, not it. Okay? So it's very interesting. There may be a teeny little blip as a part of it. It is absolutely not the root cause, and which is shocking when I share this with audiences across the country, because the assumption is that I'm going to talk about how do you limit use, because that's what people expect to hear. And there are certain adolescents for whom it is a problem, for sure.
Yes.
And here's how it's framed to understand. Just like the 5-year-old or 7-year-old for whom gaming may be difficult to manage, some adolescents are already bringing themselves to social media with baggage. Okay. That's how we'll think about it, right?
Okay.
They're already experiencing some anxiety, some depression, some distance or disconnect from their parents. And those factors, and the fourth factor is their parents may be heavy social media users. So those factors are the ones that are most apt to be indicative of kids who are going to have difficulty when they are using social media. So I'll repeat those.
Yes, please do.
Yes. So adolescents who are already experiencing anxiety, depression, who are disconnected or have a dysfunctional relationship with their parents, or whose parents are heavy users of social media, are more likely to have problems themselves and have worsening of their symptoms when they use social media. So the takeaway message is, you bring yourself to social media and social media amplifies whoever you are. So if you bring yourself a happy-go-lucky person who's pretty well balanced, you're going to spend more time in your scroll screen looking at cat videos and happy, positive things. You are not as likely to be spending more time looking at how do I, you know, manage depression, or you're spending more time looking at stuff that kind of either reinforces your anxiety or is angry or, you know, kind of sad content, which then fuels that those feelings of sadness, disappointment, anxiety, inadequacy, your eating disorder, whatever it is you're bringing.
In this segment, we explore the positive side of technology and social media for teens, especially how it can foster learning and connection. Dr. Molly O'Shea and I discuss best practices for teens seeking community online and the ways that these virtual spaces can support belonging and growth.
But there are positive aspects to the access, right? Many people online. So what are some best practices for teens when they're seeking that community online?
Well, and I think because the majority of, we talk a lot about teenage mental health, and we think, as a result, I think of all of the press and conversation we have about it, that yeah. the implication is that every teenager is struggling. Well, they're not, actually.
No.
The majority of teenagers are doing fine. So for the majority of teenagers who are doing fine, thank you. We appreciate you. Please come into the office more often. But in addition to that, those are the kids for whom, you know, technology, social media is not only, fine, but it can be a really good thing. And it's an opportunity. You can learn all kinds of stuff. I mean, think back to the pandemic. Did you make sourdough, Sarah? So you can learn stuff, is my point. And mm-hmm. teenagers in this time of curiosity, they're exploring all sorts of stuff. And so it's a great way to learn new things. It's also a major way that teens connect with one another. So in addition to the normal connecting that teenagers do through Snapchat or whatever, it's also a way that kids who might be in a group that is, I don't love the word marginalized, but a group that you might not have a lot of other people like you in your yeah. community. So the LGBTQ+ community, for example, you might be, but it may not be only that community. It might also be a racial minority mm-hmm. that's in a community, and there may not be as many people that look or experience life the way you do. Social media has the opportunity to give these kids a really great way to connect with other, you know, teenagers, adolescents in other communities, and just, you know, honestly, just kind of hang out virtually and compare notes, honestly, and get support from one another and make sure that, you know, they've got their peeps. And I think that is a huge, huge, huge plus.
In this segment, we turn to one of the hardest but most important questions: how families can start honest, open conversations when they're worried about their child's mental health. As a mother of five, including neurodiverse and non-binary children, and as someone who's walked through the heartbreaking loss of a child, Dr. O'Shea brings an extraordinary blend of clinical wisdom and lived experience to this guidance.
Now let's shift back to, like, what advice do you give families for starting the conversation when they are concerned about their kids?
I think that the more transparent and open parents can be with their adolescents, and even younger, the better. Mm-hmm. I think trying to beat around the bush or put things, quote, gently, has no role if you are that concerned. So I've lost a child to suicide, and I know how difficult it is to bring up the topic with a child. And I also know how essential it is. So my advice to parents who have concerns about any child, like even an 8-year-old, honestly.
Yes.
Using real developmentally appropriate words. So for a younger kid to say, you know, you seem really sad lately, or it seems like things are hard for you. Tell me why.
Mm-hmm.
And then
an open-ended question,
right,
is what I hear you saying.
And let them talk and say whatever they're going to say. And then you can follow up. And if you are concerned about their interest in hurting themselves, you yeah. can, to an 8-year-old, you can say, do you ever feel like you would hurt yourself? Mm-hmm. Or do you ever feel like you wish you'd fall asleep and never wake up? And let them answer. And you will not plant that seed. Mm. You will not, even in an 8-year-old's mind. if the seed has, if it exists in their mind, it exists. If they are not thinking it, they'll say, no, why would you think that? And you can say, well, you know what? I'm just a crazy parent. Mm. And sometimes I worry about stuff that's just crazy. You know me, you know, and you can play it off. But that way you've, first of all, let them know that they can tell you anything, mm-hmm. anytime, forever. And you've gotten your concern addressed. As kids get older, I think the questions can get more developmentally advanced. And for a middle schooler, I think asking open-ended questions is important, especially in middle school. Or if their behavior is one of those, every time you ask them something, they're like, why are you asking me that? All you do is ask me questions. Yeah. You know, if they're in that kind of aggressive, antisocial with you sort of phase.
Yeah.
I think asking pointed questions maybe may just start a fight, and nobody wants a fight.
No.
Instead, I would suggest saying, right now, it seems like anytime we talk, I say the wrong thing. And I'm so sad because I feel like you're sad or angry or mad. And I just want you to know that you can talk to me and I will just listen and not say a thing.
Wow.
And then let them and say, is there anything you want to talk about? And they will say, no, why would I want to talk to you? And you can say, that's fine. That's great. I do need to know one thing because I'm worried. And I need you to answer this one question.
What is it? They'll say, what is it?
Yeah. We all know that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Right. You'll say to them, are you going to hurt yourself? Do you feel like you are feeling bad enough that you would hurt yourself or kill yourself? And then there will be this long silence probably, or there will be an immediate, no, what are you talking about? Or there will be a long silence. And if there's a long silence, you can say, you don't have to answer that right now, but I'm going to make an appointment so that you can talk to the pediatrician about it, because I don't need you to talk to me, but you need to talk to somebody.
Somebody, yeah. Oh, Dr. Molly, that's so good. I mean, these are hard, sensitive conversations to have. And I my eyes are welling up just even thinking about it, because I know you personally have experienced this, and I've experienced this in my practice. And I'm so glad that we're having this conversation. And I want to also mention the Center for Excellence in Social Media and Youth Mental Health that Dr. Molly mentioned today. We will have in our discussion box for this episode below the information, not just on how you can find that social media plan, which I highly recommend through the AAP, but also through the Center of Excellence. They have some amazing conversation starter cards. There's information and resources on that site, just like we're discussing today, to start those sensitive, very hard conversations to have.
In this segment, Dr. Molly O'Shea shares her key advice for raising emotionally healthy, tech-savvy children. The most important ingredient is parents actively participating alongside their kids in the digital world.
If you could give parents of children one piece of advice about raising emotionally healthy, tech-savvy children, what would it be, Dr. Molly?
My advice for parents would be that technology and kids only go together if the parent is a part of that triad. It's mm-hmm. three things. It's parents, kids, and technology. And by being a part of that experience all throughout, you will teach digital literacy. You will help your kids by saying things like, what do you think that that creator wanted you to think or do or feel? You'll teach them how to, you know, get rid of the pop-up ads right away. And, you know, you'll know what they're watching. You'll make them savvy. So I think technology is great. As I mentioned before, I'm an early adopter. I have a kid who works for Epic Games. I love technology. I think having parents really a part of their kids' technology experience throughout is the key. And having it be a collaborative, open, conversational experience is really important, because it's really not about just lowering the boom and having some sort of rigid set of whatever. It's about helping your child learn how to regulate themselves, learn how to set limits, and on their own eventually, right? Mm-hmm. And help them see, by asking good questions, how do you think it made you feel when you had to stop playing? Mm-hmm. Did you like that feeling? Do you really want to feel that way every time? How do you think we could make it easier for you when you have to stop playing? Which is really different than, you know what, you have a temper tantrum every time you have to stop playing, so you're not going to play games anymore.
Oh, you know? I do. Right. And we've all done it.
Well, of course we have, but... right. We've all done it. I mean, even us, right? The
Yes. Version
ones who are like, oh, we're so perfect. No, we are totally not. We are No. Flawed parents like everyone else. And you know what? It's okay. But I think that's the message. It's parents and kids with technology.
I hope you came away with new insights and extra confidence in having those difficult conversations with the young people you love and care about. If these highlights resonated and you think would help other parents and caregivers, please share, like, and subscribe. Thank you for being here for Growing Up with Dr. Sarah, and let's grow up together.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.